Now, normally we'd chuck in a reference to a topical news story in the intro, but I'm sure, dear listener, you're as fed up of the big story in the UK as we are. Yes, more Exeter than Brexiter. This is the Totally Football League Show. Yep, it's me, back once again with the ill behaviour. They call me Matt Davis Adams, but these days I'm more like Tony Parks, caretaker extraordinaire. Alongside me this week, I have a triumvirate of chatters. Let's flip the script and say hello first to our betting expert. Don't ask him about bolt-on, do ask him about odds-on. He knows when to hold them, when to fold them, when to walk away and when to run. From William Hill, it's Joe Crilly.
Hello there.
Next up, a man who back in 2016, when asked by the East Anglian Daily Times to compare himself to Shefky Coochie, said, Shefky was probably a better header of the ball than me and was quicker than me. But did I have more natural ability than him? Every day of the week, I think. Who are we to argue with that? He used to ply his trade as a striker in the FL. Now he analyses it. Is Keith Andrews better looking? Probably. Is David Prutton quicker with an auto cue? Yep. Does Sam Parkin have more natural ability in front of camera and behind a mic than both of them put together? No doubt. Hi, Sam.
Good morning, Matt. Worse hair than all of the before mentioned.
Last but by no means least, you know, in a late substitution just works out perfectly. Solskjaer in 99, Tim Krul in the 2014 World Cup. Well, today we've made a late change which we hope will be just as effective. Adrian Clark isn't available for selection this week, so on in his place and perfectly placed to talk about the latest drama at his beloved Birmingham City, it's a big welcome back to TalkSport's Ian Danter.
Good morning.
There are calls from the people, okay, person, for us to do a Steve Bruce off. You've got a good Bruce in your repertoire.
Hey, well, you know, we give ourselves a chance and, you know, to be brutally honest with you, we're into the tickly bit and, you know, we give ourselves a chance and all the rest of it. So, you know, light a candle for us.
That's about our home record. You know, the chairman said, I mean, he's been terrific since we got here, to be fair. You know, if we can get our home record sorted, it's a fantastic club, this, and people have been absolutely brilliant with me personally and so on and et cetera.
Well, who wins then? Let's ask Joe and Sam.
It's just, you just put a W before every Y.
Yeah.
Instead of every Y.
Give ourselves a chance.
It's good. What do you reckon, Joe?
Can I say that they were both equally brilliant? Right. I thought Steve Bruce was talking to Steve Bruce.
That'll do for me.
All right, that's the increasingly laboured introductions done. Let's discuss some things that have happened in the wide, wide world of the EFL over the last 7 days.
You're listening to the Totally Football League Show in association with William Hill.
No matches in the Championship this weekend, but it was all about the... Is there enough ABBA on this podcast? Yes, yes, there is. Dancer's a rock enthusiast. You'd have gone for Pink Floyd money. In
no, I'm quite happy with ABBA. I have a wider musical taste than you would possibly imagine. I'll happily go for that.
So let's start with your Birmingham City. Deducted 9 points for breaching profitability and sustainability rules. The EFL said they incurred losses of nearly £48.8 million between 2015 and 2018. They dropped from 13th to 18th, 5 points clear of the relegation zone with 8 games to play. What's been the reaction of you and your fellow Blue Noses? Were you surprised by the severity of the punishment?
No, I thought it was going to be worse. Most Birmingham fans fully expected a 12-point deduction and we were braced for it. So when 9 points came up as the final verdict, there was actually an element of relief. Hard, strange that that may sound, that it was only 9 points. So the reaction's been, right, let's go to work. We've got a lot of very important games to come. The next three are against teams all battling for automatic promotion in West Brom. You could still say they're kind of in the hunt for automatic. Sheffield United and Leeds definitely are, of course. So it's a chance for Gary Monk and everyone to kind of press the reset button, because we've lost a few in a row. I think it's 3 or 4 in a row we've lost, including the Villa derby. So it's time to get things right on the pitch again, which by and large Gary Monk, James Beattie, Pep Clutter have got absolutely spot on this season with a wafer thin squad. He has done astounding work. I can't use any other word to describe what he's done with what he was left behind. Astounding work. But there's a lot of people to blame.
And not just in terms of the 9 points being slightly lenient. Do you feel kind of glad that it's come now rather than, say, at the start of next season?
That was another rumour, that it could have been held over till the start of the next campaign, which would have been a real kick in the you-know-what. This is a kick in the you-know-whats anyway, because 5 points clear of relegation is not great. It's another relegation scrap for Birmingham. But there's lots of people who are complicit in this. There is no one person to blame for what's happened. But I will throw lots of names into the mix here. Darren Dean, son of David Dean, football agent who represented a lot of the players that came in. And negotiated some of the most ludicrous wages I've ever heard a championship club bring in. Jeff Fatir, the director of football, equally complicit in signing off these names on massive money. I would also say Xuandong Ren, the owner, who signed the cheques and had no compunction about letting this go through. Also, the two managers concerned, Gianfranco Zola and Harry Redknapp, do not get away scot-free. Harry Redknapp thinks he does. He tried to control the narrative the night before the verdict was handed down, giving an interview to The Independent, saying the usual shtick, it's not my fault, Gov. I didn't know nothing. These weren't my players. Sorry, Harry, I don't buy it. You cannot be a director of football, as he was at Portsmouth, and not have an inkling that a club with no fresh investment and no parachute payments were bringing in 14 players on deadline day, including one in Hotter for £6 million, and not wonder where the money's coming from? Do me a favour.
Sam, you've been in a sort of similar predicament during your time at Luton. How does it affect players when this kind of thing happens? It's got to be a sense of, this isn't our fault. Why are we all of a sudden going from a potential promotion push into a relegation battle?
Yeah, there's definitely a bit of that. And that's why I'd echo the sentiment of Dance. They're fortunate that it's come now and not the start of next season, because that could have had big repercussions on Gary Monk's squad morale going into a new season, that possible recruitment, if that was going to be an opportunity to bring in new players. I think it's quite lenient, to be honest, because I don't think they're going to get relegated. I think they'll probably, if you look at their good performances this season away at Elland Road, for example, I think they're likely to spring a surprise in the next three games. They probably only need 3 or 4 points. If you look at Rotherham's fixtures that remain, I think they'll probably do that and, you know, probably creep over the line, given that they've got some tough games against the teams down the bottom. So I think it's been a little bit lenient, and we'll have to see if there's, you know, repercussions for some of these other clubs that could be in danger as well.
Well, you say that. Christopher Iddens tweeted at the Totally Show to ask, how likely is it at least one team in the EFL will go into administration before May? We'll come on to Port Vale later. That's kind of a separate case, but reports the likes of Derby, Villa and Sheffield Wednesday could also come under scrutiny, and the EFL have set a precedent now, haven't they? You're looking at 9 points minimum.
Brand new rules. This is why Birmingham were banged to rights, because this was part of brand new jurisdiction that had been brought in this season by the EFL on profitability and sustainability, different to the rules that the Premier League have. Let's make that distinction, because Premier League clubs, of course, have got much better cash flow and turnover. But a reminder that for every £100 that Birmingham City were earning, they were spending £202. That's outrageous. And there are other clubs, I think Reading are another club who were in a similar position of the spending wages to turnover. And many clubs in the Championship are well over 100% in terms of wages to turnover, which is really disappointing. And yes, I think there could be a number of clubs who, unless they get their accounting house in order, quick, sharp, and Birmingham are including that. Birmingham aren't out of the woods yet by any stretch of the imagination. We've still got a lot of work to do as a club to prevent getting another punishment further down the line. The splurge was made, you know, that the spending was done in that era, the 2016-17, but the wages are still there.
On the football side, I wanted to say, I know Che Adams is in magnificent form, but my concern looking at the way they've been performing, Birmingham, is there's no goals from anywhere else in that team. I think Jukovic has gone 21 games without a goal now. Jota's got one in 25. That's my only concern moving forward. If anything was to happen to Che Adams, I would worry for them. And me and Dance did a game quite recently, and as good as they are at setting up, and I think Gary Monk actually came over to me and Dance and had a good conversation at full time.
Yeah, Swansea game, yeah.
Great fella, and I think I totally agree. I've got so much admiration for what he's been doing, pulling up trees with the squad that he inherited there, not been able to bring anyone in. I just think maybe they're a little bit predictable at times, and I know he's mixed things up a little bit. He's played a diamond, tried Jota in a different position, but that would be my one concern moving forward. But I just do feel there's something inside me that thinks they'll upset one of the bigger clubs.
He's right. I mean, it's a paper-thin squad, as I mentioned, but with Che Adams not scoring for a while, the one good thing, just quickly for Birmingham, is that Isaac Vassell is back fit, who's the one member of the squad. He got injured in the Birmingham derby last season. He's been out for some time, but he's quick. He's something that Birmingham don't really have, because Adams is fairly quick, but Vassell is rapid.
All right, well, we'll see how that develops now that the financial unpleasantness is out the way. We'll get on to some football. League One, we're coming for you.
Make this an Every Saturday Super with the Super Saturday Reloaded coupon from William Hill. Available in all William Hill branches across the UK. With more prizes on offer than ever before, your new Super Saturday competitions offer you the chance to win a share of £1 million and some additional extra goodies specific to your region. All you have to do is select the number of goals, corners and cards across three selected football matches. Super Saturday football and racing competitions are free to enter when you bet £10 at your local William Hill. T's and C's apply. You can find out more at williamhill.com. And remember, when the fun stops, stop.
League One, as we know, the bottom of the table is bonkers. Gillingham in 12th, 5 points above Walsall, who occupy the final relegation place. A win for Oxford took them up six places. Poor old Joe's going to try and make sense of the relegation odds later. First, though, to Roots Hall. A hat-trick of manager sackings to speak about this week, and we'll start with the most recent. Chris Powell, sacked by Southend. It is with much regret that the club has this morning terminated Chris Powell's contract. The results over a number of weeks, 11 games without a win, has impacted all concerned and immediate changes need to be made. The club's interests are paramount, but the board are nevertheless disappointed to see Chris Powell leave. Head of the club's highly successful academy, Ricky Duncan, will take temporary charge of the first team squad. There's only one man we could ask to come on and discuss this sensitive matter. Unfortunately, he's already stated he's ill. So we'll turn to Ian McIntosh instead. Ian, your boy Chris Powell, you were so happy when he was appointed and you look so sad today. Where did it all go wrong for him?
Oh, it's a really sad day, but no manager could have come through that kind of injury crisis. I mean, it's been so many players and for so long. Generally, at any given time, 10 to 12 players out, including strikers like Hopper, who made such a great start, including the goalkeeper, including Ben Coker, and the list just went on and on and on. And at that point, it just becomes practically impossible to get any kind of cohesion in the team. And you can see with the tactical shifts and the personnel shifts, and he's tried absolutely everything, and it's just fallen away.
Saturday at Peterborough, you know, a team doing all right in the league, but haven't been brilliant under Darren Ferguson. It wasn't a particularly great performance. Clarkey told us a couple of weeks ago that they'd had a meeting with the chairman and the staff and they decided to keep going for a bit longer, but not that much longer, as it turns out. No. Is this a kind of, we're looking at other clubs down near the bottom who've made these changes and, you know, sort of work for them? You think about Rochdale in particular, 7 points from nine since Keith Hill left, and we might as well just give this a roll of the dice.
Yeah, it's one of those things, isn't it, that only sort of happens in football and no other industries, where it is considered a legitimate business plan to go, ah, it's not working, try literally anything else, anything. Try that bloke, him, that might work. And sometimes, you know, as with Sunderland and Paolo Di Canio a few times, absolutely ludicrous decisions can actually have short-term benefits. Maybe that'll happen. Ricky Duncan, good club man, great youth academy coach. Change of voice, something a little different, it might do something. But I don't really think this is a question of Chris Powell not being a good enough football manager. We know that Chris Powell is a more than good enough football manager. It's just it's practically impossible to do that job under those conditions.
So Ricky Duncan then, bit of a hospital pass from the board on the statement, head of the club's highly successful academy. is that just trying to soften the fans' reaction to it, presumably, but he wouldn't have written it like that if he was writing his own introduction to the job.
He is a very, very good at his job, bringing in players like Drew Yearwood being testament to that, but you know the list goes all the way back. I mean, it's not the first time that he's taken the reins. I don't think actually the reaction from the fans is going to be that bad. It's been a very, very long run of bad results. I think football supporters are far more impatient these days and far more vocal and audible on social media. You know, it's far harder to hide from that pressure. I would hope that not one of them would think ill of Chris Powell and would want nothing else other than to welcome him back next time wherever he pops up again. I think sadness will be the main feeling among Southend United supporters. I think everybody wanted him to do well. Perhaps he would have done well, but not with those injuries.
OK, well, the sadness in your eyes is kind of bringing down the mood in the studio, so we'll let you get back to your beloved spreadsheets now, but thanks for joining us.
Thanks, man. Stay strong.
Sam, you're broadly in favour of the decision to get rid of Chris Powell. Maybe not in favour, but you sort of understand why they've done it for the reasons we mentioned about that sort of new manager bounce that can happen.
Yeah, the point Ian just made, I think, you know, looking around at the other clubs, you mentioned one or two. You could look at Bristol Rovers as well, the boost that they've had from changing the manager. Wally Downs at Wimbledon, maybe to a lesser degree, but they've certainly had an upturn. And if they were to be relegated, Southend, the owner's really going to come in for a lot of flack. So he can turn around now and say, you know, I did my utmost to get an upturn in results. Yeah, injuries haven't been kind to them at all. I think maybe missing some leadership, some experience. You know, you're looking at the team. Simon Cox is having a fantastic season, but, you know, he shouldn't be having to play the amount of games probably, and they shouldn't be so reliant on him at this stage of his career, and they've had to be. But yeah, especially in the striker department, they've been really low. Theo Robinson was allowed to leave in January. Maybe they'll be regretting that now because he's just started to notch a few at my old club Swindon.
Joe, have you got any odds yet on Southend's next manager? I know it's been minutes rather than hours, but you do like to pounce on these things.
Ricky Duncan, the leader of that fantastic youth academy, is the 7-4 favourite. Adam Barrett, 4-1. Ian Holloway's been getting a lot of chat on social media. He's 6-1 third favourite. And then it's the usual names. You've got Paul Hurst at 7-1, Steve Evans at 7-1. I'm sure these names will crop up a little later when talking about other managers' jobs that are available.
Yeah, Paul Hurst is the League One David Moyes, basically, isn't he? So it's not just Chris Powell who's looking for new employment. Scunthorpe, Sack, Stewart, McCall. Fun game. Try and say Scunny, Sack, Stewart three times. I couldn't really do it once then. They lost at the weekend to managerless Rochdale, as we mentioned. 7 points in 9 for them since Keith Hill got the Spanish Archer. 3 managers in a year sacked by Scunthorpe. 4 defeats in their last 5, though they were unbeaten in January. McCall got manager of the month. Andy Dawson will be caretaker manager for the rest of the season, but Matt Dean of BBC Radio Humberside tweeting this morning that Nick Barmby will be joining them in a coaching capacity until the end of the season. Their next games, Wimbledon at home, Shrewsbury away, Burton at home and Blackpool at home. So 3 of those 4 going for something, certainly. Ian, looking at the stats and the club's history, it's not really a surprise that they've made this decision.
No, although, you know, 3 managers... look, my club's had 3 managers in this season and it's horrible. The fans just don't know whether to stick or twist. It's a thankless task for Andy to come in and try and pick up the pieces from what's happened before. And you're right, I mean, to go from manager of the month in January to be out the door 2 months later, it leaves those outside looking in scratching their heads. When you look at their away form, that failed to score in each of the last 4 away before the consolation goal they got at Rochdale at the weekend. And they're just one of these clubs caught up in this same maelstrom we're talking about with Southend. The actions of other clubs will have probably predicated what the Scunthorpe board have done with Stewart, another manager that probably, on balance, doesn't really deserve to have got the bullet.
Yeah, for supporters, it's galling. My team, 2-time European champions, Nottingham Forest, haven't kept the same manager through a season since 09-10. Sam, I'm guessing players sort of fall into 2 categories with this kind of thing. I guess there's the ones who get annoyed about it in the way that we do because they want some consistency, and maybe others who think, well, we'll shift the blame onto the manager because he's the one who's got the bullet at the end of the day.
Yeah, there's a part of that that I always used to feel like I'd let the manager down to a certain degree. I think there's a portion of that with every player when a manager loses their job, but within that, there'll be players in that squad that Stuart McCall wasn't picking, and they will see this as an opportunity to finish the season on a high, maybe get a new contract, maybe be in the team the start of next season. You know, I noticed the chairman's taken full responsibility for this. He doesn't want to be sacking people, I would imagine, because he's going to have to pay managers off, and I believe he's still paying off the previous 2. We were scratching our heads a year ago when Graham Alexander was dismissed after a really good job that he did there. What I will say on it, I think Dawson is very well liked, you know, within the club. I think the chairman was tempted to give him the job early part of the season. He actually came in for 1 game as the caretaker and they got a draw at home to Barnsley. And I think they had a good performance. So this is an opportunity for him to get this job on a long-term basis. He's not going to appoint anyone else to the end of the season. And I presume Nick Barmby was a former teammate of his from Hull City. I don't know. Sometimes it just alleviates a little bit of pressure. Stuart McCall doesn't strike me as someone who rules with an iron fist.
Did you ever contact a manager after he'd been sacked that you played for?
Yeah, every time. Every time. And generally, they were really receptive to, you know, getting in contact. I remember, obviously, I didn't have a good time at Ipswich Town. I remember being on holiday at the end of the year when I heard that Joe Royal had lost his job. I texted him and Joe came back and said, yeah, it didn't go particularly well for you, but I wouldn't be put off signing you in the future. And I was like, oh, he must have had a He must have had a few beers this afternoon. That is crazy. He never worked again, really, Joe, did he, in terms of management? So unless he's going to take me to Everton now. Back involved there at one point, wasn't he?
Wow, Sam Parkin, career killer. I had a look at the list of previous Iron bosses. In the 60s and 70s, they had Dick Duckworth and then Dick Roots, who, not to mention Dickie Dosh, a.k.a. Richard Money in the 90s. Are there any Dicks currently out of work they could turn to? What's Steve Evans looking like in the betting, Joe?
Very good. Well, Andy Dawson is the 4-6 favourite, with Paul Hurst again. Second favourite, 6-4. Steve Evans, 12-1 third favourite. And then we go into the same old names until you get to Tim Flowers at 16-1, which looks like an interesting proposition. He's doing very good things at Solihull Moors at the moment.
He sure is. Let's get to some stuff that actually happened on the pitch. Shrewsbury 0, Portsmouth 2. Pompey 4 points behind second place Barnsley, above Sunderland 2. They play at Wembley on Sunday. They've really gotten over that slump all of a sudden.
They really have, yeah. And, I thought that they rode their luck a little bit. Early part of the game looked like McGivory made a few saves. And then reliant on Pittman, who's been out of the side for a large portion of the last few months. He's been playing as a number 10. First he was off Bogle and then combined with Ollie Hawkins to get the crucial second goal. So Kenny Jackett's found a place for Brett Pittman in the side. I think when I've seen him live, he doesn't really have that mobility anymore at the top end of the pitch, Brett Pittman. So to find somewhere where he can still be a catalyst for them and be important for them, I think he's very good moving forward. But yeah, they're right back at it. You know, the midfield was the concern for me, but they picked up some very good results. And having seen Barnsley, I know we'll come on to them, but I'm a little bit concerned about Barnsley.
The way he's handled Brett Pittman's been really interesting. Kenny Jackett left him out of squads, given him substitute appearances, appears to prefer Bogle as a starting striker, certainly started him on Saturday at the Meadow. So I don't know whether he's just trying to light a fire under Brett Pittman to sort of get him angry and get him at it. I'll be really interested to see what lineup he picks at Wembley on Sunday. I'm going to be there commentating on that game. I can't wait. 80,000 there. Portsmouth and Sunderland, even split between supporters. And Portsmouth, a month ago, you'd have been a little concerned for them going into a final like that, but not now.
And Shrewsbury, 19 shots without scoring. That's the kind of thing you see that as a supporter and think we're going down.
Yeah, but they were unbeaten in four at home before that defeat. So the home form wasn't too shabby under Sam Ricketts. I watched Shrewsbury a lot last year during the promotion push, and losing Nolan and Nsiala to Ipswich as they did, sorry, Agogo in the summer as they did, was a big blow to Shrewsbury. We saw a fair amount of them, didn't we, Sam? We saw them at Northampton and places like that where Paul Hurst had got them in a terrific position. So again, they're hanging on by a thread, but they're one of the clubs that have already made a change. Surely they won't make another.
Burton 5, Accrington 2. I did the highlights of this game. It was crazy. Accrington continuing their slide, 2-0 up, conceded just before the break, and then it fell apart from them in the second half. John Coleman said, I think 5 flattered us. Level on points with Scunthorpe and Wickham, but with 2 games in hand. Billy Key scores from the spot against his old club, his 16th successful penalty since the start of last season. Lucas Akins goes on to become Burton's all-time leading EFL scorer in this game. He got a couple. Burton, Sam, they've really turned their form around. They're in the top half of the table, 5 points off the playoffs. They couldn't, could they?
Well, nobody seems to want that sixth position because Doncaster have really suffered the last few weeks. We probably felt Blackpool with the recent news there that they were going to get a bit of momentum. That doesn't seem to have happened. So it looks wide open. It really does. That was a cracking victory for them, considering, you know, 2 goals behind. Nice, intricate, you know, passing movements that we've grown accustomed to seeing from them, especially in midfield. And a new shape for them at the weekend, 4-3-1-2. Which a couple of clubs seem to have adopted in the last fortnight or so. And 2 up front, I think, is certainly what the supporters have been calling out for, which can be quite repetitive, but it seems to have seen a little bit of an upturn. Fraser in behind Harness and Akins. And you can never undervalue getting that goal just before half-time. And I say it a lot on this show, but 2-0 down against a good Accrington side, as it was at the weekend. To get that goal just on the stroke of half-time gives you the impetus to turn things around.
So Burton on the up, as are Oxford, Ian, who won 1-0 at Coventry. As I mentioned, they shoot up the table with that. They're up to 13th, albeit only 4 points above the relegation zone. 13 points from 18 and back-to-back wins for only the second time this season. Carl Robinson, not particularly impressed. We weren't good today, but that's kind of really harmed Coventry's playoff hopes, but in at the same time, given Oxford a big shot in the arm.
Yeah, and they needed it. I mean, but, you know, Carl and Sean Derry have really been struggling to try and get their ethos across to the Oxford players. And I think players like Brannigan have been important for them, sort of driving forward from midfield. Curtis Nelson got the winner. Scrappy winner, but they don't care. The style of football doesn't really matter at this point now. It's about getting over the line. And as you say, it's just showing the absolutely balmy nature of this table that you go up six places from where they were. I do kind of keep a weather eye on how Oxford are doing because I've got to know Sean quite well, Carl's assistant, through working with him on commentary. So I've got a slight soft spot for how they're getting on, which probably doesn't please Coventry fans listening to this. But I hope they stay up. Oxford United, and I hope they resolve the ridiculous arguments that are going on about Mr. Kazam and the ownership of the ground and whether they're finally going to get a fourth stand built and whatnot. Oxford fans deserve better than that. They're being pushed from pillar to post. Not as bad as Coventry fans are, of course, but certainly that's an issue I'm keeping an eye on.
Luton 4, Doncaster 0. Luton 26 games unbeaten. They're getting a new ground before too long as well. Only Manchester City have scored more goals at home than the Hatters. City 53, Luton 50. Luke Berry's probably the pick of the bunch here. Kazenga Luar-Luarsam with the acrobatics. The younger brother of Lamana Luar-Luar, the former Pompey, Newcastle and loads of other teams player. Footballing family, also cousin of Yannick Bolasie, brother-in-law of Jan Kermigan. I'm sure you couldn't probably do that acrobatic triple flip.
No.
Best celebration from you or a teammate? I know you're a big fan. You've often told me about that time you jumped in the snow.
Yeah, Andy Rammell. It was actually that scored the goal. Yeah, it was in the famous Wickham run. We cleared the pitch of snow at Adams Park prior to kickoff against Wolves. And yeah, straight in the snow, all of us during the celebrations, which we obviously went on to get to the semi-final that year. That was good. I wasn't one for... I'm Alan Shearer, mate. I'm Alan Shearer. I'm just, you know, losing.
In terms of celebration.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, I was just going mad. I took my shirt off once, but it was probably my finest ever goal against QPR at the County Ground. First season at Swindon, 20th goal of the season. And
Your boyhood club.
Against my boyhood club. And yeah, just lost the plot and unveiled a ridiculous amount of chest hair. Never again.
So full gigsy by the sound.
Full gigsy, yeah. Yeah, full gigsy. And I had a couple of mates who wouldn't ordinarily come to the football. And after the game, they were very confused.
In terms of this game, Luton obviously brilliant, yeah. Flying. They're going up. Doncaster in this battle to get the last playoff place essentially, but no wins in seven. Have they got it in them to turn it around?
I don't know. They had a 5-point buffer, didn't they, over a lot of the clubs chasing them, and that of course is now, you know, evaporated. What was it? They're only a point clear of seventh going into the weekend, so Grant McCann's got a lot of work to do to pull them round. Obviously Luton are a slightly different case because they're just steamrolling everybody. And they're doing it without James Collins as well, who was on international duty. So, I mean, that's just, you know, sometimes League One clubs can be really hamstrung by that player that gets called up by their country, but not Luton. They just pile on through. But yeah, I'm a bit concerned for Doncaster, as much as with Coventry as well, these teams that kind of want sixth place, but then don't.
Doncaster, Bristol Rovers, Walsall, Bradford and Plymouth coming up in their near future. The other teams around them, Peterborough not playing this weekend. Then they've got Gillingham and Blackpool. Blackpool themselves, Plymouth and Luton before they play Posh, and Coventry at Barnsley, Bristol Rovers home and then at Sunderland. So tough run in for them. Walsall 0, Barnsley 1. Sam, you covered this game for TalkSport 2. It was... James Fielden, your co-commentator, I was with him later on Saturday, and he said, I was going to say it was all right for a 0-0 right until the last kick of the game, essentially. Would that be an accurate summary?
Yeah, pretty fair. At Barnsley didn't deserve it at all. That's as bad as I've seen them in the last few weeks and months. And so good defensively, 7 clean sheets now, but they had to rely on a lot of luck at the weekend. Bad finishing from Walsall. I mean, I thought Dobson was excellent, and also Zeli Ismail, the wide player, but within that, loads of mobility, loads of direct running and wing play from the front three, actually, who, you know, caused Barnsley a lot of problems. But Cook was sitting on the bench, leading goal scorer, and I just think moving forward, now that they've had another frustrating afternoon where they've played well but not got the goals, I think sometimes it's got them joy in the last few weeks, but I think you need to get your best goal scorer on the pitch now that it's into the nitty-gritty. So I would imagine you'll see Cook with a couple of flies either side of him moving forward. But Dean Keats would have to have got them in on Monday morning and spoke about the positives, because it was a really decent display from them, just missing a goal. And my concern for Barnsley is they just seem to not be as controlled in possession as they once were, and they're really missing the goal threat.
Whose was that finish that was larruped into the top corner but ruled out for an infringement?
Zaire Osborne, wasn't it?
Oh.
I mean, with Barnsley, Jacob Brown came back in and McGeehan, who have both been suspended, and they looked like they'd missed a bit of football. They were really ring rusty. Missing Kiefer Moore, it's a massive onus on Corley Woodrow to come up with the goods, and they're not scoring many goals at the moment. So we'll see what happens on Sunday with Sunderland against Portsmouth. But if they get a positive victory, Sunderland, and can pick up maximum points in the next league game, you never know, because of Barnsley, for me, they're feeling the pressure.
Yeah, not their best performance, but a lot of time for Daniel Stendel literally applauding his defence during his post-match interview, stopping to clap his hands about how good his defence were. Let's get some odds on League One, Joe. Good luck with this. Relegation.
A few weeks ago, we discussed going all the way up to Burton. Obviously, Burton have worked their way out of it. But there's still, 13 teams in the betting for relegation. And it's getting to the point, the Grand National's only a couple of weeks away, and that essentially is a lottery, isn't it? Because there's so many runners and riders, and it's exactly the same here. You've got some teams at really big prices that could easily go down. The likes of Accrington at 9-1 looked like a decent bet for me to get sucked into the relegation zone. Southend 13-8. Obviously, Bradford, they're only 6 points away from safety, but they're 1-10 to go down. Wimbledon 1-5. Walsall and Rochdale both odds on again, but it's just a mess. It's an absolute mess. You could put a blindfold on, get a bent pin in your hand, and you could pick a team at random, and it could be one of them.
That's the first time that I've heard that metaphor of a blindfold and a bent pin. I'm not going to ask you how you came up with it. That's League One done. Next, we're going to head into League Two.
I'm Graham Wilcos, here to tell you that the Bradley Wiggins Show from Eurosport is back for a brand new series.
For 20 years, I've just been called a hero and a legend, you know, and other things, obviously, but only behind the back.
We'll bring you stage-by-stage analysis of the Giro d'Italia, the World Championships, La Vuelta, and, of course, the Tour de France. Each week, Sir Brad and our panel of cycling experts will be taking a deep dive into the world of two wheels and lycra.
Brailsford could put his hand down a toilet and pull chocolate out.
The Bradley Wiggins Show from Eurosport is your essential guide to the greatest events in cycling. Subscribe now on Audioboom, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else you get your audio on demand.
No way, no way, manamana. Don't get fresh with me, said the Yeovil chairman to Darren Way this weekend as they parted company. Not unexpected, 10 defeats in 12 games. They were beaten by high-flying MK Dons at the weekend. He'd signed a new contract in November through to 2021, so hopefully he'll at least get a decent payoff. Rather terse club statement. Yeovil Town Football Club can confirm that with regret, Darren Way has had his employment with the club terminated and is no longer first team manager. Whilst his dedication, strong work ethic and potential are all clear, the board of directors has been compelled to act as the run of form in 2019 is not acceptable. Neil Marmont has taken on first team manager duty, so they'll be reading from the book of Marmont for the rest of the season. You got some inside knowledge on this one, Dan. So the new owners, they had a hand in making this decision?
Yeah, I think so. And by the way, that was very Partridge, wasn't it, that statement? His contract has been terminated. But there's all sorts going on with Yeovil. Apparently there was a local consortium that wanted to take control of Yeovil, and I'm led to believe they offered a pretty substantial sum, $3.5 million, but were blown out of the water by American owners. And there's something about the land around Huish Park, whether it's, I think there's public records that show it's been transferred into private ownership. There's something going on that doesn't seem right. The supporters are all very much in the dark. I don't think Darren Way was popular, though, was he? I mean, certainly taking the Yeovil supporters I know seem to suggest he was taking too much credit for their victories and not, you know, shouldering enough of the blame for the run of defeats that the Glovers were on. So that's, what, 4 defeats in a row with that defeat at Milton Keynes, who did play well, and Chucks and Ike's goal was an absolute delight to watch for their second. It's a world away from the heady days of getting into the Championship, and I wonder whether they're casting glances down elsewhere in the West Country to Torquay and seeing what Gary Johnson's doing down there in National League South and thinking, do we go back and try and persuade him to return?
As for MK, Sam, comfortable win for them here, and all of a sudden looking like they've got the legs to go the distance, and maybe Mansfield haven't, but a couple of tough games for them next. Forest Green Rovers, Lincoln and Tranmere all coming up. So it's one thing beating Yeovil at home, but this is where we're going to find out whether they are playoffs or automatic.
No, I'm confident. This is the one I've got right in the last couple of weeks. I fancy MK to cement their automatic position, although Mansfield on the last day could be good fun. And pleased to see my old mucker Ryan Harley getting a very typical Ryan Harley goal.
So MK looking well placed. You mentioned that last day of the season game between them and Mansfield. It was a really good weekend for Paul Tisdale and the Dons, because Mansfield went and lost at home to Crewe. They run out of steam, no wins in three. I'm wondering how costly was that red card for Tyler Walker, because it was an injury time, silly, got sent off, missed three games. He's come back and he hasn't scored in the three games since he's been back. Is that a bit simplistic? Is there something deeper going wrong for them?
Quite possibly. I mean, they had such a horrendous finish to last season. You know, maybe that's just playing on the players' minds a little bit. I mean, there's teams there that are in better form. That's clear. Tranmere, Forest Green coming up as well. And like I just touched on, I feel MK Dons are going to be stronger than Mansfield. They brought Nicky Ajozi in. He's not got a great return of goals as of yet as well. You know, they were decent in that performance against Lincoln a few weeks ago. But I just feel across the piece, MK Dons are going to have the legs on Mansfield, and they're going to have to do it through the playoffs if they're going to achieve promotion.
Yeah, it's actually no wins in four for Mansfield. And the one thing that we always talk about at this time of the season, Ian, is you don't want to be going into the playoffs. It's often said that if you finish in the top playoff position, you haven't got much of a chance of going up. The statistics actually don't bear that out, but you want to be in reasonable form. That's something that Kenny Jackett was big on at the weekend, wasn't it? If we are to be in the playoffs, we want to be going in good nick. If Mansfield are going in having not won in a while, that's got to carry over.
Which is what happened with Coventry last season, that they went in good nick, although Notts County thought they were in the box seat, and Coventry did them in the semi-finals, albeit with a controversial goal at one point. I seem to remember was it the first or second leg? But there's a number of clubs kind of bubbling under. I agree with Sam about Milton Keynes. I think they will drive their way through to ensure automatic behind Lincoln and Bury, and then it's just a question of the other three spots and whether Crewe, who only had one win in 12 before they went to Field Mill, can keep that sort of consistency going. They might have something to say about top seven. You just don't know. It's another strange old division. Not quite as balmy as League One, but there's a few clubs scrapping it out to try and get involved at the shake-up for the top seven, I think.
Yeah, and one of those are Tranmere. Six wins in a row, looking for back-to-back promotions potentially. 2-0 at Colchester. Massive contrast between they and Macclesfield, who they came up with last season. Sam, I know you all want to throw some love the way of James Norwood. 26 goals this season, 8 in his last 9 after finding the net here. Makes such a difference if you've got somebody at the top end of the pitch who's producing those kind of numbers.
Yeah, and you forget that they had Cook as well last year at Walsall, so they play a slightly different way now. And yeah, it was a really accomplished finish from him. It's not something that I've seen too readily from him, you know, running that length of distance to get a little finish. And he looked like he was just running out of steam. He prefers, you know, to be in and around the 18-yard box, little balls down the side. But he had a lot of thinking time on that occasion. But no, he stuck it away brilliantly. And I think that's the fourth straight game he scored in. That's the first time in his career, which surprised me somewhat. But no, very good away performance and good players, you know, all over the top end of that pitch. Caprice, Jennings involved for the second goal, and Perkins back at Colchester against the former club. I think there was question marks about his signing because of his age, and he got a goal and assist at the weekend, and he could be proved to be very vital for Mickey Mellon. So no, they're in tremendous shape, and they've got the experience as well, Dance, of the last two, I think, playoff campaigns.
Yeah.
So, you know, they faced Forest Green, who were in there a few years ago. You know, that could count for something, couldn't it, when you get to that knockout stages?
And at the flip side of that result is Colchester, who...
Three
defeats in a row. And, you know, they seemed... I thought they were starting to get back some of the form that they had before Christmas and New Year, but that seems to have dissipated. And I think that's 11 goals conceded in their last five. So they've got to start learning to shut up shop to give them half a chance. But yeah, so they're outside the top seven. They've got work to do.
What about Sol Campbell, trademark? Sol Campbell's Macclesfield going tortoise over hare in their bid for escape, leaving it till the 93rd minute to snatch a draw against Stevenage. 2-2 it finished, 2 points separate them and Yeovil. They've got Lincoln up next. If they do it, Sam, and Macclesfield fans aren't going to appreciate me saying this, but Sol Campbell deserves a job at a higher level next season, doesn't he? He goes up to League One, does he not? I mean, this is an act of escapology that David Blaine would have been proud of. I know we've thought, oh, he's changed his team around and stuff quite a lot, and he seems to be somebody who's criticised readily and maybe potentially unfairly sometimes. They looked dead and buried when he went in there, and they're right in with a shout of staying up there.
They did, and they've got a great opportunity of overtaking Yeovil, you know. Notts County would be very disappointed with that, you know, home reverse against Exeter. But no, I mean, Macclesfield have given themselves an incredible opportunity. I've read some criticism about his setup, considering it was a home game against Stevenage, playing essentially five at the back. You know, we're not talking about flying wing backs here. We're talking about being very resolute and safety first in a home game when it's pretty imperative they start getting maximum points from some of these games. So there's still a little bit of negativity there, but you can never have it both ways. And reliant on two veterans to get them out the mire. Rose with the beautiful through ball for the first goal, and then Whittaker, who is obviously a legend in those parts, coming up in the last minute to get a crucial goal against Stevenage. I spoke about them last week. They're a tough team, Stevenage, and with Newton back as well at the top of the pitch with Alex Ravel, they've got goals and they've got good players wide in Elias Chair, who I spoke of as well. So I mean, it could turn out to be a good point, but I think the fans just want to see them go a little bit gung-ho from the off.
We took a call, Matt, from a Macclesfield fan on TalkSport in the last hour of our show on Saturday afternoon, thoroughly unimpressed with Sol Campbell, and would far rather have Whittaker in charge to see them over the line. He sounds like he was... What Sam was saying there about what's the formation, what's the plan, what's the... They can't see an identity in what Sol Campbell's trying to do, at least this fan couldn't, and he claims he's speaking for a sizable contingent of Macclesfield's fans. But the fact that they're in touch with Yeovil and others, but that's testament to what Sol has done. And also Neil at Notts County, even though to lose to 10-man Exeter with pretty much the last kick of the game is a proper wounder at Meadow Lane. They're going to have to really pick themselves up in training this week. That can't have been a good Monday morning to have walked back in to the training ground there. But look, Sol's got them there or thereabouts, and he deserves some credit for that, surely, despite what some Macclesfield fans were telling us.
Also still in trouble at the foot of League Two, Port Vale beaten 2-0 at home by promotion-chasing Forest Green Rovers. But the real story here, again, is Norman Smirthwaite. He looks like a friendly chap, and he's got a funny name, but Port Vale fans not particularly amused by him. He says, the football club has to trade through to the 5th of May, and it will. I'll pay off all the bills up to that point. After the 5th of May, I will not put 1 cent more into the club. He then added, I've empowered the chief executive to deal with anybody who's in a position to buy the football club and be in situ by 5th of May and pass all the requirement tests. If they meet that deadline, great. If they don't, the club will go into administration and it will get a 12-point deduction. Good news potentially for Notts, Macclesfield and Yeovil, not for Vale. Sounds pretty heartless, Ian. I mean, the supporters have been voicing their displeasure with protests before and during games over the last few weeks. Is this what's got his back up? It just feels like a really cruel way to try and hurt a football club.
Well, I'm led to believe that there is another bid. There is an interested consortium. I think they've offered $3.5 million. I think that's in the last 24, 48 hours. There's been significant interest shown in Port Vale. Whether that is Smirthwaite's asking price, I'm afraid I don't know. But it doesn't sound like a paltry offer for a club like Port Vale that have struggled towards the foot of League Two for a few seasons now. John Askey was unbeaten in four before that loss to Forest Green at the weekend. So he's tried his best on the field to try and, you know, get some results together. And, you know, 20th place before the weekend. It looked like there was a bit of hope. But Smirthwaite, there's a bit of sabre rattling going on there, isn't there, Sam? You know, he's looking to either smoke out potential buyers, but he's not winning a charm offensive with any supporters, are they? And Port Vale fans are... It's not quite the Blackpool level of staying away in their droves, is it? But, you know...
It was noticeable, wasn't it, when you saw the goals? And yeah. Particularly, there's obviously the stand where the away supporters are, but at the other end, it looked really, really sparsely
The Wembley
populated.
Of the North, they used to call Vale Park, and it's not as densely populated as Wembley usually is at the moment. So there's a club in desperate need of a feel-good factor.
I said that earlier on in the season, and Joe picked me up on it and said it's the Midlands, and I said it was referred to as the Wembley of the North.
I was just thinking, it's there's no way that Port Vale is the North, but I was keeping my powder dry on that one. Joe, odds-wise for relegation, we've got obviously Notts and Macclesfield in the two spots at the moment, but Yeovil can't be far behind them in the betting by now. Anybody else down there too?
No, as they have been all season, pretty much all season. Notts County and Macclesfield are odds on. County 2-7, Macclesfield 4-9. But obviously, we just talked about the job that Sol Campbell's done, getting them to within touching distance. They were, at one point in the season, 1-33 to go down. So, big change there. And, of course, with Yeovil dropping like they have done, they are at even money. So, only a point above going odds on for relegation themselves. There is a big gap then in the betting to Morecambe, who are 16-1, and the rest of the teams are 20-1 or bigger.
Hello and welcome to a brand new podcast for TV fans by TV fans, dedicated to everything on the box that's both on and in demand.
When I first got into this, I was worried about bad reviews. And then I realise it didn't hurt. But I say thank you to the nice ones.
On my Sky Planner, you will see things like Wheeler Dealers, the world's most luxurious airliners.
It's Mr. Saturday Night himself. It's Emma O'Leary. Ready for your Tuesday morning commute. Series linked with me, Emma Bullimore, and Mark Jeffries.
Right, let's have a look at some of the games coming up this weekend. I want to start with the game that you're going to, Dance, the EFL Trophy Final. We mentioned that the EFL will be absolutely delighted that it's Sunderland v Pompey and not Swansea under-21s v Chelsea or whoever. It's sold out. It's the fact that they're both going for promotion as well just adds a little something else to it. You know, red versus blue. Wembley's going to look amazing for this game.
It is going to be great. I can't wait. I mean, the EFL Trophy deserves a final like this because it's a much maligned competition. And Sunderland have got past a couple of juicy under-21 sides to get to this stage. Obviously, once they got out of the group stage, they had to get past Manchester City and Newcastle. I saw both those games up at the Stadium of Light. And, yeah, they were totally deserved it. You would think, oh, Manchester City under-21s, they're going to stick. Not a bit of it. It was completely Sunderland dominating a young Manchester City team. So they fully deserve their opportunity. And goodness only knows Sunderland need a bit of a supporters need a day out at somewhere like Wembley. Last time they was there was the League Cup final against Manchester City, wasn't it, a few years ago, where it kind of went wrong for them. It's a very even contest. Very, very even contest. We've spoken about Portsmouth and the changes that Kenny's made. With Sunderland and Jack Ross, he's one that's improved morale, without question, up at the Stadium of Light, and has got people enjoying their football. This kid, Duncan Watmore, having come back from that hellish injury run he's been in. I think he's being handled with kid gloves up to this point. I wonder whether he might end up, you know, having a say on the lush, wide-open spaces of Wembley Stadium in a final like that. Lee Cattermole will almost certainly get booked. He's a walking yellow card, isn't he? But that's what he does. That's kind of his... He's the enforcer.
Goal machine as well.
Yes, I did that, which is something he never had in his armoury before. You're quite right. I can't call it. I don't know whether Sam can.
We got to go as neutrals. I mean, producer Abby making a great point. It would be a fantastic episode for season two of Sunderland Till I Die. Mm. But on the bloke that you brought up the other week, the old fellow, what was he, 90?
Yeah.
And those lads went and got him a ticket. We've got to be wanting Sunderland to win for him, haven't we, if nothing else?
Yeah, maybe. Well, Portsmouth won the FA Cup not so long ago, didn't
2008,
they?
2008,
And Sunderland have got Mickey Gray, haven't they, against Charlton. Yeah, we'll go for Sunderland.
Yeah.
Yeah, that could happen again, though, couldn't it? I was thinking that. Sunderland-Charlton's quite... could be quite likely for a playoff final.
Yeah.
Clyde Mendonca and all that.
Those are the days. In terms of the Championship games, there's one that leaps off the page, not just because you're here, Dance. West Brom versus Birmingham.
Yep.
Friday night. Good luck to the stewards for that one. West Brom's home record, not great. So actually, this might be a decent opportunity. Gary Monk can say, listen, back's against the wall with what's happened. Local derby. We can go and get something here against a team flimsy at home.
Absolutely. I can only imagine that's exactly the point that he will have been hammering home to his players on the training ground at West Hills this week, that West Brom look a little shaky at home, but a derby game will level a lot of that out, I'm sure. And, you know, Jimmy Shand's done okay, hasn't he, West Brom, sort of picking up the slack after Darren Moore's departure. I'm sure they still have designs on automatic West Brom. I'm sure they haven't given that up, the fact that they can still try and get in there and mix it with with Sheffield United and Leeds and Norwich, but it's going to take a fairly Herculean effort. It's going to take Championship form, I think. An average of 2 points a game, you'd say, for them if they are going to get back involved. But that's exactly the sort of form that Norwich and Sheffield United are in, most definitely. Leeds are a bit feast or famine at the moment, but I'm looking forward to it. I'm hoping that we can, as Steve...
Can we go there? Can we? Can we go there and get the right result and all the rest of it?
But a player like Che Adams needs to start scoring again. He's been off the boil lately.
In terms of League One, Sam, Scunthorpe v Wimbledon is one that catches the eye for obvious reasons with the new Scunthorpe manager. Wimbledon, bad defeat for them, having turned it round a bit, losing 4-2 at home to Gillingham. That or Barnsley versus Coventry, which one of those are you going to be keeping close tabs on?
I just think there's something on every fixture, really. I mean, there's nothing in the Championship that jumps out at you, but you think some of the big clubs will maybe come a cropper against a team they're expected to beat. I'm really interested to see how Barnsley respond, certainly. Doncaster, Walsall as well, just because I've seen those two clubs in recent weeks, and Doncaster are sliding. John Marquis is not scoring. Wilkes is not scoring. Kane is not fit or not in form. All those players that I've waxed lyrically about this season.
You say that hurt you, didn't it, to say Kane not in form?
Yeah, I mean, everything. I've always questioned Doncaster a little bit defensively, but going forward, I thought they've been excellent this season. So I'm really, concerned about their form and just seeing what that good performance Walsall had against Barnsley, what effect that will have for Dean Keats's men, and interesting to see if he mixes it up personnel wise as well going into that one. But massive repercussions both ends of the table.
And League Two, Tranmere versus Carlisle, you look at that and think that is very much form versus lack of form. Carlisle, we've spoken about a fair bit over the last few weeks, not really happening for Stephen Presley there, but it would be pretty football-like if they went to Tranmere, who look unbeatable at the moment, and got something. And they kind of need to keep themselves in contention.
Just one win in nine for Carlisle, and 2-2 against Cambridge last weekend. Yeah, it's a bit concerned for the Cumbrians that they seem to have lost a bit of their way. Tranmere, though, we've spoken about them. They've adapted to this division quite brilliantly. I fancy Tranmere heavily for that one.
All right, well, that's that then. Another week where the EFL gave us plenty to chat about. Ian, thanks for stepping off the bench. Sam, Joe, thanks as ever for your company. And you too, dear listener. Until next time.
You've been listening to the Totally Football League Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, email sales@muddyneesmedia.com and be sure to check out our other football shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audio Boom, and everywhere else you get your audio on demand. Supporting your team can be a beautiful thing, but then come the injuries, the goal droughts, and the downright disastrous defeats. That's a little bit like life, really. And here at the Totally Football Show, we believe we should all support each other the way we support our team, through the good days and the bad. And that's why we're continuing to work with CALM, the Campaign Against Living Miserably, a charity dedicated to preventing male suicide. On average, 12 men take their own life every day in the UK. So that's your starting 11 and your manager every single day. And part of the problem is that many of us still feel uncomfortable talking about mental health and suicide, and this can often stop men from opening up and getting support when they need it the most. So if you're worried that someone close to you is having a tough time, check in with them and let them know that CALM is there. Every day from 5 p.m. till midnight, CALM provide a free, confidential and anonymous helpline and web chat for any man who needs support. Visit thecalmzone.net to find out more about CALM.